Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. Seth, this was brought to my attention by friends of mine on a bit of a Texans Mafia-type group text here. 2 years ago today, Jack Easterby tweeted, "My family and I are thankful for our time in Houston. We appreciate the opportunities that McNair family provided us and wish the organization well moving forward." It was 2 years ago today that Jack Easterby was future endeavored by the Houston Texans.
And my favorite Jack Easterby story that I heard through the grapevine through the years was Jack Easterby showing up at a league event that the Texans had not planned on him being at when he was an employee of the Texans. Wow. Like, just basically showed up uninvited. Towards the end of his towards the end of his tenure with the Texans, where things had just gotten super weird.
That's
apparently
bold.
it's one of the things that I have zero clue whether Lovie Smith's input was part of Jack Easterby getting the ouster, but I choose to think that it was.
Yeah.
And it really was. Once Lovie Smith was hired, there was a very noticeable stepping back of Jack Easterby and him just not being present everywhere all the time. And then within a few months, he was fired. So I think that people will try to credit Lovie Smith for delivering CJ Stroud to the Texans or what have you. There's so many twists of fate and everything that I never buy into any of that. But if he had anything to do with them getting rid of Jack Easterby, God bless him, and then he deserves a statue for that. Because yeah, there's some truth that needed to be told finally and heard. I think the truth was told about Jack Easterby plenty of times, but it just wasn't being heard until enough key people realized what Jack Easterby was all about.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of the upturn for the Texans, was once they realized, oh, okay, this Jack Easterby is not the best thing for this organization.
It was during the bye week that season. I'm looking at the schedule. The first game out of the bye week was a game in Las Vegas against the Raiders, a game that the Texans lost 38-20. So that's neither here nor there. The Texans were a bad team back in 2022. I'm looking at the lineup they trotted out there, and that this is why, like, this the purpose of me bringing up this anniversary is not to pick on Jack Easterby. It's to illustrate just how ridiculously fast they've turned this thing around. I mean, we're talking two calendar years, and what's amazing to me, Seth, is that a lot of the guys on offense starting that game, the first game post Easterby, are a lot of the same guys that are on this team right now.
Yeah.
With one key distinction at quarterback, it was Davis Mills in that game and not C.J. Stroud, but Damian Pierce started at running back, Nico Collins started at wide receiver, Brandon Cook started at wide receiver as well, and then withheld his services as a protest about Jack Easterby, presumably.
Oh, that's right, yeah. He was stripped of his captaincy.
Three-fifths of the starting offensive line are three-fifths of this starting offensive line. Both the tackles and Kenyon Green started that day. So you're talking like over half the offense is the same guys, you know? The defense has been almost entirely turned over.
Mm-hmm.
The defense, this was the only two starters on defense that day that are still here are Jalen Petrie and Derek Stingley Jr., both rookies that year. Malik Collins, Rasheem Green, I guess Jerry Hughes is still here, but he's been on and off the team, and he's on IR now. Roy Lopez started that day. How about this?
Oh, yeah.
How about this for linebackers? Garrett Wallow, Christian Kirksey, and Kamu Grugier-Hill were your linebackers that day.
Wow.
Jonathan
Vijay Hill showed up the other day versus the Texans.
He did. Yeah. He did for the Vikings, yeah. So they've turned over almost the entire defense. They've turned over – look, they've turned over a majority of the roster, which is what you do when you're, what, 3-13-1 is what they were that year? So, yeah, man. So it's they've turned this thing quick. I have great appreciation for it.
It's look, there's a little bit of luck involved, obviously, in getting C.J. Stroud. That was the biggest thing. I wonder where we'd be right now. What if they had – if they hadn't drafted – let's say they were – What would have been the most likely scenario if the Texans were drafting third last year?
That they would have drafted Will Anderson, because I'm guessing Stroud would have gone second to whoever.
Yeah.
It would have still been Bryce and CJ. They would have drafted Will Anderson and signed Jimmy Garoppolo.
You think so?
How's that for? I don't know. It's as good as any hypothesis, right?
Yeah, I don't think it would have been Davis Mills as the quarterback, but maybe, I don't know, maybe they would have given him a role with it.
I don't know. I don't know. Now, I guess the big question would be, would they have drafted Anthony Richardson?
Right.
With the
or
third
Will Levis.
Over Levis.
I don't think Levis was. The pre-draft hype about Levis, you remember last year, I went, because I was watching Levis, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. So I went out and sought out expert opinions on Will Levis, and I couldn't find a single damn person who knew what he was talking about who was actually high on Will Levis.
Yep.
I think that was all pre-draft hype for whatever reason.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't think they would have drafted Will Levis.
No.
Maybe Anthony, would they have taken a chance on Anthony Richardson?
How would we feel if Anthony Richardson were the quarterback of the Houston Texans right now?
He'd have gotten injured a bunch of times.
He would have been.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets injured. I think we'd be pretty frustrated right now.
I think we'd be pretty.
I think we would have been, there would have been a little bit, there would have been a division in the fan base too about people that were for and against Anthony Richardson. If you were playing the way he's been playing and getting injured as much as he's gotten injured, there would be some Anthony Richardson truthers, and then there would be some fire Nick Caserios.
There would, there would be. CJ has been he's been the biggest catalyst for he and D'Amico for where they are right now, no question, on the field, for sure. people are texting in their favorite Easterby stories now. My favorite Easterby story is the one where he got fired by the Texans, LOL. someone asked, what is Jack doing now? He popped up on the bench with the A&M basketball team during the tournament last year. I think that was more like his friendship with Buzz Williams, their head coach. I don't think he's working for A&M. I know he's been poking around the NFL trying to get back in the NFL in some way.
I think the whole thing about Easterby is that they really loved him in his role up in New England, where he's kind of a character coach type guy. And I think he is really good at that role. It's that the Texans put him into a role that he was wholly and completely unsuited for, largely through the self-promotion of a guy who once had on his resume that he was the assistant general manager in Jacksonville, when in fact he was just an intern that year.
He's 21 years old.
Yeah, he just... That was my first. Remember, that was where I tried to raise the alarms about Jack Easterby. Nobody was listening to me, so I just said, "Go die, everybody! Yeah. I'll let you guys just take this." There was when they first announced his hire, and it said he was the assistant GM in Jacksonville. So I called up people in Jacksonville, and they were like, "Who? No,
right.
What? No,
right.
I've never heard of this guy before."
Right,
and there it was. That it was on the website for like a year and a half, 2 years before they actually fixed it.
Yep. Someone says the Texans would have taken a QB at third, too much pressure for the restart. Yeah, I think they'd have found some way. If they weren't picking first or second, I think they would have found some way to get up into the top two to take one of those guys would be my.
Yeah.
I mean, they traded a bunch of stuff to get Will Anderson. You know, if they, I think they. I'm glad we don't have to play this hypothetical. I'm glad we are where we are and we've got CJ.
What if they
had
drafted Bryce Young last year?
Where would the Texans be if they drafted Bryce Young? They would
I think Bryce would have done better in this system.
For sure.
I think that we'd be. I think that. I mean, he's still got some. He has some flaws in his game that you could see coming and that you knew he had to clean up. For a guy who's as small as he is, he's not athletic enough to be Kyler Murray.
No.
But he's not as. He's just not technically sound enough to be Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm.
And for a guy that's had all the best tutelage and everything through the years, I always wonder, like, how are you this sloppy mechanically? If, yeah, I'm sure you've received instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I don't know if they, if he would have accepted the coaching or if this is just who he is.
Yeah, yeah. He for sure would have been better because you can't be worse than he was Carolina, if nothing else. We talked to Nick Caserio on the show yesterday, and he gave us updates on a couple of the injured techs. And Seth, you asked him about Christian Harris, which to me is the biggest mystery on this team so far, is like, mm-hmm. man, how bad is it, whatever Christian Harris is dealing with? Because we've seen him for a total of half a practice in training camp. And other than that, he's been invisible. Here's Nick Caserio on Christian Harris's situation.
This has kind of been a little bit of a tricky one, Seth, if I'm being honest with you. So, you know, I think there's been some stops and starts. I mean, he was available, then he wasn't, and then he was back. And then I think that kind of second go-around, we kind of figured he was going to probably be out there for a period of time, but it's hard to put a timetable on anything. So, I mean, we'll kind of take it one day at a time, one week at a time. And, you know, when a player's available, then he'll be available and he'll be on the field. So, I mean, I think we understood that there was going to be a period of time that we were going to have Christian, I mean, which is one of the reasons that we put him on DFR to start the season. So, kind of taking one week at a time, and when he's available, you know, hopefully he can help us. And, you know, but like I said, I'm not going to put any particular timetable on that one because it's really not fair to anybody involved.
DFR, for those who don't know, designated for return.
Yeah.
So that's...
So it's some kind of calf injury that he's had, which the fact that they tried to get him back out there at practice during training camp and he lasted like a third of a practice.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's a calf injury, I'm just guessing that it's some kind of compartment syndrome type thing where there's a lot of swelling and it just keeps getting aggravated somehow. I have zero clue other than it's a soft tissue injury,
mm-hmm.
and that they've tried to have him come back. So I don't think they're trying. I don't think the Texans are trying to be overly kind of opaque about it, I guess, or just evasive about it. Because they did try to bring him back. Because my first thought was like, all right, is this something that they should have just told us right from the get-go? But no, I don't think they knew. They really genuinely didn't know. They tried to bring him back during camp, and it's not coming along the way they would have hoped.
Yeah, it sounds like they've been kind of swerved on this thing a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, they've been surprised by some of the fits and starts with it with Christian Harris. I hope he comes back. Boy, they sure could use him this weekend. You know, if Azeez Al-Shaair and Henry Toa Toa are out. I mean, that's where we are with the linebacking core right now. Henry Toa Toa possibly being out is a major, major deal, you know?
The biggest thing in the press conference the other day, when asked if DeNico Autry would be out at practice, DeMeco basically said, I want to say he said, of course, or yeah, like almost like, of course he'll be out there. Then when asked about whether Christian Harris was out, going to be out there, he said, he'll be out. I'll let you know when he's out there.
I'll let you know
when he's out there.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it's not. I don't think this week is going to be the miraculous Christian Harris
return. No, DeMeco's demeanor when he answered that question about Christian Harris was, I'm done answering the question. I'll let you know when he's ready. Okay. Stop asking me with a smile on his face. But the nature of the answer was, I'll tell you guys when Christian Harris is ready. You know, it's almost like he's fending off the question at this point. Nico Collins is the other big injury. Here was Nick Caserio yesterday on Nico Collins.
Nico's working hard, certainly making progress. You know, hopefully once we get through the Jets game or whatever it is, I think it's after the Jets game, mm-hmm. and we'll see what his availability is. And no different than kind of what we did with Kurt there as well. Kind of Kurt had to start the season on DFR, so knew he was going to be out there for a period of time, started practicing here over the last few weeks. And, you know, we activated Kurt here yesterday, so what that means relative to Sunday, you know, I'm not really sure. But every situation is different. Every athlete is different. Every person's body responds differently. So all we can do is take the information, assess the information, try to make a good decision, and then just keep pressing forward. So that's what we're doing in the case of Nico.
So with Nico, when he said he's making progress and he's working hard, if I'm going to read hardcore into that, then I'm going to take it at face value and say, all right, whatever, if they just want him, he's showing progress, so maybe he's pain-free, but they want to be careful about when they bring him back or something.
Yeah.
But I'm not overly concerned that this is going to turn into a season-long thing.
No.
It feels like a hamstring at this point, and hopefully just a hamstring that cools down.
Yeah, I mean, that DeMeco is normal, to use your word. Oh, he is typically very opaque on injuries. Like, he doesn't
opaque.
Tell a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the word I used?
You did, 2 minutes ago.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was good. It was used correctly and everything. It was great. He definitively said Nico is going to be back. D'Amico did at one point. Like, he, you know, so that's where I feel like this was a put him on the IR, get him well, get him back for Detroit, that kind of thing.
I was watching I'm watching this Aaron Hernandez docudrama mostly through clips on social media,
right,
of people making fun of how bad the documentary is, yeah, or the drop. The,
like a biopic, the drama series.
Biopic, whatever, yeah, it is. Yeah, docuseries. There's a scene where Aaron Hernandez is apparently injured, and Bill Belichick says that your job from now until next week is to go from injured to being just hurt. And I feel like they're not giving that speech to Nico.
No.
I think it's your job is to go from injured to hurt to your hamstring feels awesome.
Yes.
And we don't want to mess with this anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not a get out on the field no matter what, somehow, some way. This isn't the AFC championship game where you got to drag yourself out on the field. They're going to try to be as careful as possible with
it. Yep.
Them.
I think so too. I think so too. People saying the Texans would have drafted Bijan Robinson and then gotten Caleb Williams in this past draft. That would have been interesting. Oh, Bijan.
Yeah, you can't plan on getting Caleb Williams, though.
No.
That's the problem.
No,
you can't plan on being the worst. It's the hardest thing. It's so much easier to predict the Super Bowl winner than it is to predict who's going to be the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't buy that. You're definitely going to get somehow Caleb Williams.
It's the hardest thing to tell the internet also. Listen,
yeah,
you can't plan for getting the first overall pick. Not even the internet. I mean, talking heads on TV, like, oh, I don't need to go all in on a quarterback this year, and you got Caleb Williams isn't going to barnstorm and play for every team in the league. He can only play for one team. That is a serious dot to land on right there, you know?
But you might have ended up with Jaden Daniels, though, too.
You could have.
So I think there would have been – listen, remember last year going into the season, people were gung-ho for D'Amico, but they were still very skeptical of Nick Caserio.
Yeah.
And I think without a quarterback last year, that heightened scrutiny of Nick Caserio would have continued all through the season, unless whatever they did at quarterback ended up working out. But I think everything would have been put on hold for at least one more year.
Yep.
In terms of fervor and enthusiasm.
We're getting a lot of interesting texts about that hypothetical you threw out there about this with the draft and everything else. We'll save some of them for the next segment here. But up next, you know who is our quarterback? CJ Stroud. And I'm perfectly happy with all that. However, there is something about the Packers that makes this a possible big-time trap for the 2024 version of CJ Stroud. And we will tell you what that is coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
CJ Stroud was asked yesterday in his press conference about the balancing act of big chunk plays, but also protecting the football. That's a big key this weekend because the Packers turn the opposition over by far more than any team in football. We'll hear from D'Amico about the Packers in a minute, but here was CJ yesterday talking about protecting the football.
Yeah, I would say just execute and finish, you know, like execute our plays. I got to be accurate and really just, you know, understand that, you know, like this team is known to keep, you know, their defense. I mean, their defense kind of keeps their team in the game by getting turnovers. And they do a great job of that, you know, especially on the back end. Got some really good DBs, and up front they play really well, and their backers are really solid. So, you know, another great challenge for me to try to be better with. You know, I feel like I've been kind of like a little sloppy, turn the ball over a little bit, but sometimes the ball doesn't roll your way, you know, but you got to take those shots, and you got to, you know, be aggressive to, you know, see what you can get away with and what you can't. So I don't regret any of the decisions I made, but I definitely know that, like, you know, you're putting yourself at risk. So I definitely know that this game I got to be very smart with the football and just, you know, take my shots when they come. But, you know, if they don't come, then, you know, just being smart with the football.
I liked hearing CJ Seth acknowledge that he has been sloppy a little bit. He's certainly sloppier with the football this year than he was over the course of the entirety of last season, because the way the question was framed to him was, if I remember it correctly, was kind of like, why are you so good at protecting the football while making these big chunk plays? And the fact of the matter is, he's been just okay at protecting.
He's average. Yeah, he's got 4 interceptions on the year, which is right about average, and it hasn't been the crazy ratio of touchdown to interceptions. You know, the touchdown numbers have not been as gaudy as you would have expected, perhaps, with the receivers that they do have. So it's still a work in progress. I think that he's done a good job of, despite those 4 interceptions, I think that teams are putting him in a position where he's got to make a lot of tough decisions about, what do I risk this here, do I not? And you saw in that Patriots game, that interception, I'll put on CJ. I know a lot of people want to blame Dalton Schultz for it, but the fact of the matter was, the defender had his hand up in between Dalton Schultz's hands. If the ball had been put more out in front of Dalton Schultz, it might not have been a reception, but it wouldn't have been an interception. Right. So that one was on CJ, and he was under duress. I'm not crushing him for the play at all. I thought it was a good throw to make, but he's had to, it's been harder, and there haven't been as many wide open opportunities. So finding that balance it's one of those challenges that he has in his second year that he knew he was going to have, and I think he's doing a good job with it.
Yeah.
It's I think I'm cool with it right now. I don't feel like he's taking undue risks with the football.
Yeah.
And then if you go to the Patriots game too, the thing that he does a really good job of, man, and this is in comparison to a lot of veteran quarterbacks, he is so careful about not throwing his guys into danger.
Yes.
A lot of those balls last week, somebody asked me, like, hey, is CJ less accurate? Because it seems like guys were having to go to the ground for a lot of footballs. A lot of those are genuinely just him throwing it to where the guy's not going to get crushed.
Yeah.
And he's going to err on the side of throwing a low ball that you have to dive for, but that you're not going to take a hit from a safety who's just lurking there. And or sometimes it's the only place to go with the ball, really. And I think he's done a great job of that part of it. That's all part of managing the risk too, not just for turnovers, but for bodily harm.
That feels like it's next level stuff, even for a veteran guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that. With all the chaos going on, especially with CJ. I mean, CJ deals with more chaos in the pocket than the average quarterback does. To have that level of awareness to not only get rid of the football and try to throw it to where it can get caught, but throw it to where you're not throwing your receiver into a concussion is
the
really
the thought remarkable. I had on Monday Night Football was, my God, Rodgers is going to get somebody killed here. Rodgers does not give a damn at all.
Nope.
So I think he might actually be trying to hurt some of those people. I think he might have it in for Mike Williams.
This is how I'll get Devontae on the team. I'll empty the receiver room.
I'll injure everybody.
D'Amico Ryans was asked about the Packers defense, which turns teams over more than any other defense in the NFL this year.
I think the Packers have been good at taking the football away, starting with their defensive coordinator change and Jeff Hafley coming over. And I know his emphasis, you know, from being with them, you know, his emphasis is always on the ball, creating negative plays. That's what he truly believes in. And you see, you know, his imprint on his defense instantly. We got really good players, McKinney, Alexander, guys. They attack the football the right way, and that's helped them win football games. And the ball is the most important thing. Like, you can take it away and give the offense a short field. Like, it really helps you win games and helps you be successful. So that defense is thriving in the turnover market. They're leading the NFL in turnovers. And for us, we have to do a great job being conscious of protecting the ball at all costs.
The most important thing about football is the football.
A once great Texans coach said that exact thing
That's a quote that a lot of different coaches will use at various times.
Yeah.
But you have to be careful when you use it.
You're
because
right.
If you're David Culley in the 2021 era of the
Houston
Texans. The
most important thing about football is the football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just too easy to mock and ridicule. Whereas when somebody like D'Amico says it, you're like, that's deep, man.
Yeah.
That's deep. He's thinking about things on a different level. Pete Carroll, same thing. He said the most important thing is the football itself.
Yeah.
That's just the next level defense of mine. David Culley says it, and all of a sudden, like, oh, I can't believe he said the same thing.
Oh, my God. It's so
various
obvious.
Various other genuinely good coaches have said. Yeah.
It does sound a lot smarter when you're 5-1. Mm-hmm. That the football is that important, for sure. Jeff Hafley, by the way, former Boston College head coach who chose to leave college football to become a DC in the NFL, 6 degrees of separation from the Texans. If he leaves there, guess who gets the job at BC? Bill O'Brien. So there you go. Yeah, Bill O'Brien, who's doing good things at BC right now, actually.
How are they right now?
They were 4-2. I don't know how they did last weekend. They might have been off last weekend.
Yeah.
That he's won 4 games already is a big accomplishment up there.
He's at a spot in Boston College, kind of like Bill Snyder at Kansas State, where I think he could ride mediocre success to great renown just
yes.
by virtue. People will constantly make the excuse of like, well, okay, yeah, but you're doing it at BC. Or, oh, yeah, you're doing it at K-State. Wow, yeah, you're actually one of the best coaches in all the land.
He,
yeah.
He could win 8 games a year there for the next 20 years. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, they're 8-4, they'll be good. We know where O'Brien's getting a lot of love right now. As you know, I'm a Cleveland radio enthusiast during the mm-hmm. 5 a.m. hour before we come on the air.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of respect up there right now. And it's not just because Deshaun Watson was productive under Bill O'Brien. A lot of the anecdotes coming out now. Albert Breer was on their station yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was listening. They were replaying some of it this morning. He was on the afternoon show. And Albert Breer has direct ties to Bill O'Brien. We know this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of the talk is that Deshaun is not getting the tough love that he needs in Cleveland right now, and that O'Brien, when he was with the Texans and he was a young quarterback up and coming,
mm-hmm.
frankly, the successful portion of his career is that he got a lot of tough love from Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien is getting a lot of respect up in the Cleveland area right now based on Deshaun Watson's complete and utter failure as a Cleveland Brown.
Would he be able to get him a membership at a fancy health club up there? The same way, maybe that's what he's missing too. All of the different things the Texans did to help out Deshaun Watson. Yeah.
Well, they got him a membership at the Houstonian. Yeah.
Right. I know. Yeah. Yes. So I'm saying, yeah. Like, did they have that situation in Cleveland?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I think the biggest thing, one of the stories that came out too about Deshaun when he was in Houston was that somebody had noticed that, wow, he gets a lot of direction from the sideline before the plays, and like, how many decisions is he actually making on his own, and how much of it was Bill O'Brien and then by extension Tim Kelly. And the year Bill O'Brien got fired, Tim Kelly was there, but they're running the same thing, doing a lot of the same stuff. I would have to say Bill O'Brien right now is probably the favorite to be first offered a job with the Browns. Whether he chooses to accept it, it'll be really interesting.
I don't know, man. Like, it may be a lot.
Do you think O'Brien thinks he could fix Deshaun Watson right now?
Ooh, that's a good one. Probably, because coaches have hubris, and he's worked with Deshaun before. This is not a quarterback that's completely foreign to him. There's evidence that they've worked together well before. So, yes, I think he does think he could fix Deshaun. I do.
That's tough.
To be clear, I don't think he can. I think Deshaun is unfixable at this point.
If O'Brien, the next job he takes in the NFL, if it doesn't work out, that'll be his last opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL.
Without question.
So would he, if you're Bill O'Brien and you're offered the Browns job with the thought that you're going to fix Deshaun Watson, you've got this other roster, but you are also working for an owner who's narrowly escaped being sent to jail at various times, like all these things, do you take that job?
You do not.
You do not take that job.
And I think he's
it's
really
toxic
happy
right now.
And I think he's incredibly happy in Boston right now, is the sense I get. I think he really likes coaching up there. You know, he's got a family situation with his son that is more conducive to being near family, you know, his, both him and his wife's family are all up there. I think
he'd rather work for the Catholic Church in Boston than Jim Haslam in Cleveland. That's pretty.
I don't know
that's
that
a
I would,
pretty damning indictment of Jim Haslam. I'll tell you that much.
I don't know that I would couch it that way.
That's what he's doing.
It's in a sense,
he's working for the Catholic Church. Who would you rather work for? The Boston Catholic Church or
the Browns?
The Cleveland Jim Haslam.
The Browns.
Who's more despicable?
Oh man. This is interesting. Would the Texans have made a run? This goes back to the hypothetical we were playing a little bit earlier this hour about, because today's the anniversary of Jack Easterby getting fired. Like, what would have happened if the Texans had been picking third or fourth instead of second, blah, blah, blah. Would the Texans have made a run in the offseason, 2023 offseason, at Aaron Rodgers if they had had the third pick in the draft? I don't think they would have. I don't think Aaron Rodgers would have wanted to come here at that stage of the Texans, where D'Amico's not coached a game yet. The roster is still a 3-13-1 roster as far as Aaron Rodgers is concerned.
They would be running a scheme that he's got familiarity with.
That's
true. I mean, Bobby Slowick and Matt LaFleur, like there'd be some a lot of that would come down to Matt LaFleur's conversations with D'Amico and Bobby Slowick, like honest conversations probably about what are we getting here? What are you thinking? It would be close to plug and play in a lot of ways, though. I mean, it'd be a very quick onboard. And remember, it took a year really for it to click for Aaron Rodgers on the offensive side of things. They won a bunch of games that first year, but the offense wasn't really clicking until the second year.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That might have been more likely than it feels.
Maybe. The Jets were obviously an alternative because that's where he wound up. And the Jets just at that stage had a way more win now roster than the Texans did. You know, he's 39 years old at that point. Does he want to?
And Rodgers' buddy Nathaniel Hackett was there with the Jets. And it seems to be important to Aaron Rodgers.
Can you imagine?
I don't know.
Yeah, D'Amico Ryans. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers wants to come here, but you have to hire Nathaniel Hackett.
Right, yeah, you got to fire Bobby Slowick. You just hired him. And then
bring old Nathaniel with him. All right, Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. Speaking of the Texans, speaking of trades, how active do we expect the Texans to be over the next few weeks in trades? Already some rumored names floating around that the Texans could go after, and the people have spoken as to what they want. They told Seth Payne, and Seth Payne told Nick Caserio what the people want. We will get to that coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the trade deadline actually moved back a little bit this year in the NFL. I saw some people yesterday when we were talking about the trade deadline complaining like, man, it needs to be pushed back to like week 12 or week 13, and maybe they do that someday. It has been pushed back slightly from before. It used to be after week 8. It's after week 9 this year. It's November the 5th, which is a Tuesday. It's the Tuesday after the Jets game for the Texans. So the Texans play Sunday against Green Bay, then the Colts at home, and then the Jets on Thursday Night Football. And then after that, if they want to make tweaks to the roster, it's whoever's out there on the waiver wire. You know, so trades can be made until November 5th in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon here. How active do we expect the Texans to be over the next few weeks? This is the first time the Texans have been kind of like in an Astros spot, you know, where it's they're one of the top teams, and can they make a move that maybe is like a finishing move for them. You know what I mean? Like put them over the top kind
of
move.
Yeah. It's kind of fun. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. It's just weird to be able to make Astros comparisons without having to apologize for it in advance.
Hey.
You know, like in previous years, I've been like, listen, I'm not comparing the Texans to the Astros, but they could do this Astros type move, where now it feels like they're closer than they've been in a long time to be able to talk about them in comparison to the Astros.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, they're 5-1, kind of, man.
If you want to be like the Astros, this is what you would do.
Mm-hmm.
You go get yourself a Justin Verlander or a Greg Newsom.
Hey, damn Seth, it. If this were a 162 game season, the Texans would be on pace to win 135 games. The Astros have never come close to that, ever.
Bums. You bums.
You bums. They're bums. No, but seriously, how active do you expect Nick to be? We'll play you demanding he trade for a DB in just a second.
I think, honestly, at the risk of reading way too much into Nick's answer yesterday, I'm going to read way too much into it like a lot of our listeners did.
Yeah.
Listen very carefully to how Nick responds to my demand.
It's a demand.
that he go out and trade for a defensive back. Nick, I have to pay off on a promise I made to my social media followers, which is I put out the question to them, who do the Texans, who should they trade for before the trade deadline, which position group? And I am here to demand that you trade for either a safety or a cornerback based on the responses of the people. If you care about the people, if you care about the people, that you'll trade for a defensive back sometime in the next couple of weeks.
We're all about the people, so we'll see how the next few weeks go. So I'll take that under advisement when we turn the transaction and say, on behalf of the city of Houston and Seth Payne's followers, we hereby declare the following trade.
Yeah.
When we turn the transaction in.
Yep.
Oh, when? Not if.
Yeah.
But when, Sean.
Okay.
Not if, but when he turns the transaction
in. Good job, Seth and Seth's social media followers. That one sailed right over my head, the when.
Did not go unnoticed by us.
No.
That's right.
No,
when?
No. When?
When we turn the transaction in, right there, he decided that, yes, I need to pander to the masses, and I'm going to... there's no chance in hell they haven't talked about various defensive backs that might be out there.
Well, other people are sure talking about various defensive backs in the Houston Texans right now.
Buda Baker has come up a lot.
Yeah.
So Buda Baker is an interesting one because he's a safety. I think sometimes because he's smaller, people think like, yeah, he's like a cornerback. He plays safety.
Yeah.
And I don't know if right now, honestly, I want more of a cornerback because for one, even when Lassiter is healthy, they've got deficiencies at slot corner and man coverage. Petrie has done an awesome job doing what they're asking him to do, but when it comes up to going against really good wide receiving corps, I get nervous about Jalen Petrie out there in man coverage. And same for Eric Murray. I think Eric Murray's done some really good things, but you just don't feel awesome about him in man, where you bring in somebody like... Greg Newsom would be a tricky one, because then almost it's... boy, then you've got an embarrassment of riches at cornerback, which I'm into.
Yeah,
very much into.
Yeah, yeah. Greg Newsom gave a little follow on social media to a couple Texans yesterday. People, that did not go unnoticed by the people. Followed Derek Stingley Jr. Followed C.J. Stroud on social yesterday.
Was there any kind of a link or anything to like agents or something that might have sparked that, other than just him getting interest?
Good question. I just chose to blindly think that Greg Newsom wants to become a Houston Texan. That's, you know, that's the sexiest way to look at it. Buda Baker to the Houston Texans is part of an article that Cody Benjamin put. Boy, there are a lot of Texan ties in this article. 8 big names that could be on the move. He's got Damian Pierce going to the Vikings. We just gave the Vikings a running back. What the hell? Damian's not going anywhere, man.
I don't think Damian. I was very, very encouraged by Damian's big run in that game. I think he has made some improvement in how he reads his own runs. There were a couple, including the touchdown run in that game. But a couple of plays where he showed a vision and a decisiveness on zone runs that I don't think he had last year.
Yep.
So it wasn't perfect, and he's got to keep getting better at it. But, that was very – I don't think there's a – I think the Texans were not – they were 100% in his corner the entire training camp. When I was skeptical of them, and I was surprised that they were as much in his corner, I think they're very much in his corner.
I think the Cam Akers trade is almost symbolic of how they feel about Damian Pierce, honestly.
Yeah.
The compensation for Buda Baker in this article would be a 4th-round pick in next year's draft. Would you do a fourth?
I would do a fourth. I think he's been injured a lot the last couple of years.
Yep.
He hasn't played a lot of football. That'd be my only hang up there. Is just like, all right, what are you? We've already got injury issues with Derek Stingley
safety.
Gets injured every year.
We've got
injury issues at safety with Jimmy Ward, and that's the part that makes me nervous. If I had to choose between Greg Newsom, who plays a bunch of slot corner, and Buda Baker, I'd rather have Greg Newsom right now.
Now I've got another CBS article here. Boy, CBS is in on moving people around around the NFL. They've got the Texans going after Jonathan Jones, who is a New England Patriot. He's a cornerback, DB. It just says DB. Houston secondary is banged up, they say, with Lassiter. If the Texans wanted to better solidify corner to gear up for a playoff run, they could look to the team they just trounced in Week 6 in the Patriots. Starting corner Jonathan Jones is in the final year of his contract. He's been a solid player through his 9-year career. So Nick knows Jonathan Jones. He was in the building when Jonathan Jones came in. Through six games this season, he's tallied three pass breakups and a forced fumble to go with 25 tackles. They don't speculate as to what the draft compensation would be. But again, I'm thinking, like, day three pick feels about right for a lot of these guys they're talking about. You know, for a rental, it's, you know, for 10 games.
For a guy that's on a one-year contract.
Correct.
Yeah, I wonder with where the Patriots are right now and with Jonathan Jones' age. But I know they like Jonathan Jones a lot. I wonder if they would actually...
They would do
if,
that
if they
deal.
Would part with him, or if they would look like if they look at him as a veteran who's got to be a part of the core moving forward with a defensive minded head coach. But I'd be all about that. Yeah, I like that trade.
Yeah,
and we know that Nick may have had a conversation about him last week.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep. So the good news for those that are into content is that all the names being floated for the Texans right now appear to fit in the bucket that would require Nick Caserio to put a proclamation at the beginning of the trade. Crediting Seth Payne and his social media followers.
Listen, I don't want anybody else to fall for this one. I see a lot of fake news about Patrick Surtain out there too. People, a lot of fake reports that Patrick Surtain's got—he just got an extension a month ago in Denver. And their defense is awesome. I don't think they're doing a damn thing. Patrick Surtain is not coming to the Texans.
No,
I don't. They're 100% no.
Nope.
They are holding on to Patrick Surtain.
Nope. Yeah, he's not coming here.
But it got some. I saw like multiple tweets yesterday with huge amounts of retweets of fake news about Patrick Surtain.
He's not coming here. The Broncos are invested in Patrick Surtain. All right. Well, let's circle back to the Packers and the Texans, and let's get a look at things going on the Packers side. Let's get the view from Green Bay. Marcus Eversole is he's the afternoon host, PM Drive. Does a great job on 107.5 The Fan in Green Bay. His show is called Better Call Eversole. I love that show name. But he covers the Packers. He'll join us in the next segment, and we'll get Green Bay's view on this game coming up between the Texans and the Packers. Sunday, noon kick, right here on Sports Radio 610. Stay there.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.